starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. The story of a man who moved with it. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Everything was all right until about a mile north of the Cimarron. That's when my horse got a hoof caught in a frozen dog hole and broke his leg. So I had to shoot him. It made me feel awful bad. I didn't feel any better thinking about the walk ahead of me. Close to 40 miles to Dodge and carrying my saddle all the way. Guess I'd been on the trail about an hour. Near as I could figure, it was around 3 in the afternoon. And I'd ease the saddle off my shoulders for a rest and a smoke. And that's when I saw the stranger riding up from the way I'd come. He was tall and thin. And his horse was taller and even thinner. And they made quite a pair.
Hi.
How are you?
You lost?
No. My horse busted his leg a way back. I'm on my way to Dodge.
Oh, that's your horse, huh? I saw it.
Yeah.
On your way to Dodge, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
You got any more of that tobacco?
Yeah, sure. Here you are.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
That's okay.
A big walk you've got ahead, ain't it?
Kinda.
It's going to be dark soon. You figure making camp?
That's the idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's too bad.
Yeah.
Do you need any food?
No, thanks. I got enough.
Uh-huh. Well, I thank you for the tobacco.
Sure. Anytime.
Hey.
Yeah?
Not saying this beast won't drop dead from the shock, but do you want to climb on behind? Save you a piece of boot leather for a while, anyway.
Why, I'd be much obliged if you think that animal of yours can carry us.
Well, she won't mind. Should have been dead a long time ago, except she don't know it. She don't mind.
Well, okay, thanks. Here, will you hold my saddle till I get up, huh?
Yeah, give it here.
Yeah.
Can you manage this saddle?
Yeah, give it to me. Yeah, I got it. Now, let's go. You heading for Dodge, too?
Not in particular. Just north.
Uh-huh.
This beast will do about 10 knots with the wind behind her, but we ain't going to get more than 5 with this load. You ain't in no hurry, are you?
Well, I was kind of hoping to get back tonight. It's a Christmas Eve, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
That backbone of hers sticking it to you?
Oh, no, it's okay. Thanks.
Notice that tin doojigger tied to you. You the law?
Yeah, I'm a U.S. Marshal. My name's Matt Dillon.
That's so. I never seen a marshal on foot.
Well, it happens sometimes.
How is it you're down this way? Isn't it to mite off your course?
Hmm?
Say, you marshaled down here as well as Dodge?
No, I just took a prisoner across the Cimarron into Oklahoma territory. Turned him over to the army there.
Did,
And then he shut up tight. We must have ridden a couple of miles without a word. I got to thinking about Dodge and Chester, Doc and Kitty, and the rest of them. You know, there's something pretty special about any place at Christmas time. The backbone on the stranger's nag was just about to split me in two when he talked up.
My name is Cowley.
Amos
Cowley. Better heave to a spell. She's breathing mighty hard.
All right, hold up.
Ah. Yeah, it's getting a little chilly, isn't it?
Yeah. Could I trouble you for another smoke?
Oh, sure, sure. Here you are.
I thank you. Say, What's it like in Dodge?
What?
Dodge. Well, what's it like?
Oh, it's like any other town, I guess.
Pretty big, huh?
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Not so big as New York,
though. No, not as big as that.
You know, I haven't been in a big town now for more than 10 years.
Oh, is that so?
No. Been down the territories, drifting. Thought I'd move up north this time, maybe go back east.
Now you're from the east, huh?
Some time back. Say, what's it like?
What?
Well, Dodge, any town, at Christmas. Same as it used to be?
Well, I guess so.
What do you do?
Well, same as most people, I guess. What most people do at Christmas.
Well, that ain't saying a lot. What are the folks like? And what does it look like? I just kind of like to know.
Well, I don't know. There's Front Street. That's most of Dodge right now. Of course, it's getting bigger all the time.
Do you have any kids?
No, I'm not married.
Yeah. Kids have fun Christmas.
Yeah, they do. That's certain. In Dodge, they sometimes have a party for the kids a couple of days before Christmas. Kids like that. And then everybody gets feeling good, looking forward to Christmas Eve. Like last year. There was snow on the ground, but the sky was clear. You could even see the stars. I was going down the street to the Texas Trail to meet Doc and Chester. Chester, he's my deputy. Doc's a doctor in town. We had some work to do later on in the evening. You could see the light shining behind the curtained windows, and almost everybody had a sprig of holly berries hanging up. They got some from the east a couple of days earlier. I remember running into John Bumby. He's a kind of general handyman in Dodge. Never says much, but he sure had a lot to say that night.
Oh, hello, Marshal.
Oh, hi, John.
Lovely night for Christmas Eve, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is, John.
Yeah.
Pretty fine night.
Peace on earth, goodwill to men, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, that's the way it should be, John.
You know, Marshal, this is going to be quite a night for me. Yes, sir.
Oh, is that so?
Oh, yes, sir. Tonight, I'm asking Mrs. McNish to become Mrs. Bumby.
What? Well, John, I didn't know that.
Oh, I know. It's been a mighty fast secret, but I'm popping the question tonight.
Well, I wish you a lot of luck, John. Hey, I'll tell you what. Come by to the Texas Trail later and we'll have a drink on it.
Oh, I will. I really will, Marshal. You're good and kind, Marshal. Good and kind. Merry Christmas, Marshal Dillon. Merry Christmas.
Well, the same to you, John. That may sound kind of funny to you, but John Bumby's a good man. A little peculiar sometimes, but good as they come. And they don't make enough like him. Of course, most everybody in Dodge suspected Doc and Ms. McNish were sweet on each other. But it just goes to show you. I'll tell you about John and Ms. McNish a little later. So I went on down the street. You know, it's a funny thing about those words, Merry Christmas. Men say it to each other, and, well, it makes them feel kind of good.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Used to be a seafaring man myself. When you're on the sea and it comes Christmas, things like that can count a lot.
Yeah.
Well, we might as well get underway again, huh?
Sure.
Yeah. All right.
You want to take my saddle?
Get it here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Give it to me.
Okay.
I guess you'll miss it in Dodge tonight, I mean, won't you?
Well, if you could get a little more out of this nag of yours, we might make it tonight.
Oh, there's not a chance. She'll be on her beam ends pretty quick. She's been on a long reach since sunup.
Oh.
Mighty bare country up this way.
All right, depends on what you're used to.
Mighty bare where I've been, too. It's not like the sea. That's always different.
How come you left it? I always heard a sailor doesn't ever get it out of his blood.
The sea? I guess you can get it out of your blood, all right. You got the right reason, you can.
Yeah, I guess so.
Say, you trying to get something out of me?
But, well, no. Get what? I would just remind
you. You want to ride with me? I don't want any talk about the sea.
Well, you brought it up.
I get it.
We will return for the second act of Gunsmoke in just a moment. But first, tomorrow night, Jack Benny and his whole fun-making gang make a personal appearance at a Long Beach, California Veterans Hospital. It's going to be a Christmas they'll never forget, as Benny and the bunch cut loose while they assist the folks at the hospital in trimming their Christmas tree. Be sure to join the fun tomorrow night on CBS Radio when it's Jack Benny time all across America. Now for the second act of Gunsmoke.
Amos Cowley sulked his way along the trail for the next while. And then it was almost like he couldn't stand the quiet. Or maybe he had things on his mind. He turned his head.
Go on.
What?
Go on, tell me some more.
Oh, about Dodge?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Well, you try some more, huh?
Well, they got a little pine tree in the Texas Trail.
A tree?
Yeah, come down a long way from the north. Kitty Russell, she's a hostess in the Texas Trail. Well, she got a lot of ribbon and gewgaws and made it look real nice. That was last Christmas.
The star at the top?
The star?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. It looked like a star, I guess. It sure looked pretty. And there was a difference in the place that day. Everybody was celebrating and feeling real good. The doors would swing open and somebody would come in and, you know, maybe somebody you just knew to nod at, but because it was Christmas Eve, he'd come right up and say, "Hello." Oh, maybe that's a good reason, maybe not. I don't know.
All right, I'll tell you.
Anyhow, it was still kind of early.
Just wait, you take.
Kitty and Chester were standing off looking at the tree.
Hi, Matt.
Good evening, Mr. Dillon.
Hi, Kitty. Hi. Chester.
How do you like it, Matt? Christmas tree.
That's yours.
That's real pretty.
Only tree but one in the whole town.
Yeah, Kate's got one over the Alfaganza.
Oh, well, I'll have to see it later.
Sure, you're next.
Where's Sam?
I don't know. Maybe he started celebrating too soon.
Oh.
Doc's taking over the bar.
Yeah, that's right.
You want a drink, Kitty?
Sure.
Oh, right away. I'll get you a drink.
You haven't forgotten anything, have you, Mr. Dillon?
Forgotten? What, Chester?
There. What did I tell you, Miss Kitty? I knew just as sure as my nose that
you'd forgotten. Oh, that. No. I hadn't forgotten.
Oh, well, I thought as soon as they get Sam sober enough to take care of the customers, we could go on over to Doc's like we planned.
Sure, we'll do that, Chester.
Here you are, Matt.
Thanks, Doc.
Well, it's still snowing out?
No, it's not. Where are you going, Kitty?
All right, just want to look outside. Ah, real pretty.
Man thinks of a lot of funny things that don't mean much. Kitty standing at the door sniffing the cold air and the warmth inside and the whiskey in me. It was a good feeling. And then Chester and I decided to take a bottle over to Mr. Hightower. He's the telegraph operator over at the depot. He runs a printing shop on the side.
Say, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, Chester.
Do you mind if I stop by the church for a minute?
No, I don't mind.
I just feel kind of right tonight, Mr. Dillon. Figure I ought to thank somebody for it.
Sure. So we stop by the church. I've never been much of a man for church, I guess, but I went along with Chester. Wasn't anybody else there, just the two of us. Guess we sat for 10 minutes in that place. Chester a little way off with his head bowed. You know, there's a lot of peace in a church. Maybe it's the quiet. Maybe it's the good that people find in there. Now, whatever it was, it made a man feel glad about pretty much everything.
I haven't been in a church since I don't know when.
Oh, is that so?
I heave to my... Well, she's becalmed again, mister.
Okay.
She sure wasn't built for it, I'll tell you. You ever see anything like that?
She is kind of old, isn't she?
I've had her going on 8 years. She hasn't changed a mite. Eats like a pig and looks like a four-legged mizzenmast.
Smoke?
Don't mind. Hey, what about that fella Hightower? Did you get that bottle to him?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I guess it was lonely over in the depot all alone. He was glad for the company. There was a wood fire burning in the stove, but it didn't keep out the cold much.
You gents. Merry Christmas.
Well, how's it going, Mr. Hightower?
Oh, slow, Marshal, slow. Bit of excitement about an hour back, though.
That's so?
Yep. 9:15 got stuck between here and Hutchinson. Lots of snow back there.
They getting her out?
Sure, they're trying, but I'm sure glad I'm not on it. It's going to be a cold night on that train.
Well, it's kind of chilly in here, isn't it, Mr. Hightower?
Any warmer, and I'm going to sleep.
Say, we brought you over a bottle of Irish for company.
Jamesons, well, I declare I was just thinking about a top before you boys come in. Now, that's real friendly. Will you have a drink with me?
We sure will.
Let's open her up, huh? A couple of glasses up on the shelf there, Chester. Get them down, will you?
I don't know if you get an idea about the folks in Dodge or not. They're not any different than any other people, nor the town either. I guess maybe it's a pretty small place at that. The depot, the hall, a few stores, a church, Doc's office, a Texas Trail, Alafraganza, my office. Not much, but it's where you live, you know?
Sounds all right. I lived in a town once back east. Small. I know what you mean.
Well, maybe you'll be going back.
Maybe. Say, the kids, they still believe in St. Nick?
Oh, sure, I suppose.
Mighty few kids down where I've been. Injun kids, they don't believe in St. Nick.
No reason they should, I guess.
I used to believe in it, you know that?
Well, I guess most people did one time or another. Hey, you figure we come maybe 10 miles?
Maybe.
Yeah, it's getting dark.
Yeah. Well, come on. You want to ride the saddle for a bit?
Oh, no. That's okay.
Well, then okay.
We rode on, and I thought about last year, about Kitty, Doc, and Chester and me going over to Doc's place after Doc got tired at Tended Bar at the Texas Trail. It was about 12:45, and we stood around and sang Christmas carols. I remember how it sounded that night, how it looked. The glow in the stove in the middle of the room. And the frosty windows.
On a cold winter.
Yeah, it was Christmas Eve, all right.
That was so deep. Noel. Born is the King of Israel.
Say, that was fine. That was just fine.
Yes, it was.
Oh, gee. Say, now, what do you say if
listen.
Hey.
Oh. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
You know, I feel sentimental. That's exactly what I feel. I feel sentimental.
I know what you mean, Doc. I surely know.
Okay, Doc. Bring him out.
And I remember how Doc scuttled over to the bureau and brought out some packages. The presents weren't much, but it didn't matter what they were. And when we'd finished opening them, it was Chester who said what we were all thinking.
I just want to say, Miss Kitty, Doc, you, Mr. Dillon, I just want to say that this is the best doggone Christmas I ever had. And that's what I want to say.
Say, he was going to tell me about that, that fella John was caught in that woman. What was her name?
Oh, yeah. Ms. McNish.
That's right.
Well, she said yes, and you've never seen two happier people in your whole life. Yeah, she's Ms. McNish Bumby now.
Well, that's good.
You know, you might settle for a bit in Dodge here. You could get work there.
Sure would be fine if you could get back tonight, wouldn't it?
Well, it can't be helped. I'd be a lot further away and a sight more tired if you hadn't come along.
Yeah. Now, listen. How far do you figure before there's a place you might pick up a horse?
Oh, I don't know. 15 miles or so, maybe.
Oh, I'm not going to make any 15 miles in this nag tonight, that's for sure.
Oh, that's all right.
Now, I tell you what. You go on alone, you see.
Oh, no, forget
now, you
it.
Go on alone. She'd hold out with one man on her. And then you get a fresh horse and you ride into Dodge tonight.
Well, thanks. That's
great. I'm telling you, I want you to go. I'll be fine. I've walked before. Probably make it almost as quick as you.
Look, it's real nice of you, Mr. Colley, but no thanks.
Now, Christmas don't mean nothing to me. You got friends waiting for you.
Well, I'll see them tomorrow.
Ah, you're a fool.
Well, that may be.
All of them nice folks, you're going to make them feel pretty bad.
Look, I'll stay. If you want to go on along, thanks for the ride.
Well, might as well make camp then.
I guess so.
And listen, you want to tell me some more about what you was telling me before we turn in?
Well, sure.
Take it kindly, mister. I'll get yourself settled. I got some stuff in my pack we can eat and maybe get a fire going. Then after we eat, you can tell me some more.
We made a fire and then shared what we had for supper. He seemed to soften up after that, and we talked for a couple or 3 hours. It was like he was starved for news of people, everyday things, and just plain company. And that's how we spent Christmas Eve together out on the plain. And then when the fire was dying down and I was about ready for sleep, he said...
Marshal.
Yeah?
I want to tell you something. I've been needing to tell it for a long time. Do you mind?
Why, of course I don't mind.
Well, then I'll tell you. A few years ago, I was skipper of a little schooner. I used to sail up and down the East Coast, you know, Boston, New York.
Yeah.
Well, one night, we hit dirty weather off New Jersey. Real dirty. blew us off course, and we piled up on the rocks and knocked the bottom out.
That's too bad.
There was 18 passengers aboard, Marshal. 4 of them was kids. We never saw them again.
No.
And my own wife and my kid went down, too.
I'm sorry.
Well, now, something must have happened to me after that. I didn't want nothing to do with ships or the sea, and I started to drift out this way. I couldn't forget, though, do you know? And I didn't want to be near folks, especially kids, to remind me, do you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's how come I've been slewing around ever since.
Sure, I understand.
Just kind of wanted to get it off my chest.
Sure.
Marshal, I'd like to ride into Dodge with you tomorrow. You think I might meet some of them folks you was telling about?
Why? I don't see why not.
That'd be all right. Maybe I wouldn't need to drift no more. Maybe I could drop anchor, do you know?
Yeah, you might at that.
Yes. Well, good night.
Good night.
Merry Christmas, Marshal.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Cowley.
Gunsmoke, under the direction of Norman MacDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was specially written for Gunsmoke by Anthony Ellis, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in the cast were Lawrence Dobkin, with Harry Bartell and John Daner. Parley Bear is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. Gunsmoke is heard by our troops overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke. Tomorrow night, Edgar Bergen's real-life daughter, Candy, pays him and you a visit on The Edgar Bergen Show with Charlie McCarthy. Candy and Charlie hit it off fine, but Edgar has cause to regret his hasty decision to invite his 6-year-old daughter into the show, especially when she starts throwing her voice. Sounds like fun tomorrow night on most of these same stations when CBS Radio presents The Edgar Bergen Show with Charlie McCarthy. This is Roy Rowan speaking. And remember, Eve Arden is our Miss Brooks, teaches you how to laugh every Sunday on the CBS Radio Network.
In place of our regular program, Recording Library of West Texas is proud to present the best from old-time radio. We hope you'll enjoy this holiday episode from the golden age of radio.
Here's a last-minute Christmas shopping suggestion.
Jingle bells, bells of NBC. Oh, what joy to cook and bake while listening merrily. Pots and pans, sink and stove, work goes easily. Kitchens ring with happy chimes when tuned to NBC.
What will you hear in your kitchen after Christmas? bacon sizzling, coffee perking, dishes clinking, and, if you're lucky, a new sound. NBC radio listening on that new set. The perfect gift to lighten Mother's long hours in the kitchen.
Kitchens ring with happy chimes when tuned to NBC.
James Stewart as the six-shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother-of-pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the six-shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the six-shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the western territories leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
There was a nip in the air, not a freezing, biting, angry nip, but a sort of tingle that made the morning stars shimmer and swung them out of their orbits a little closer to the earth. Oh, it was a winter nip, all right, but not a hard winter. Not a winter when the cattle would come down from the high places, poking their noses into the ice-encrusted ground. It was a mild winter nip. Mild enough so that the breath of the boy on the pinto turned only a faint gray as he rode toward the campfire where the man was sitting.
Howdy.
Hello, mister. I see your fire. I thought maybe you wouldn't mind if I gave my pony a chance to warm up.
Sure, sure. Make yourself home.
You heading for Thompson's Corners, mister?
That's right.
I just came from there.
Oh, well, you must have been riding all night.
Just about. You see, I'm running away from home.
Oh, that's so. Seems kind of a funny thing you'd pick this time of year to run away. So close to Christmas, I mean.
I hate Christmas.
Oh?
It's just for kids, anyhow.
Well...
I didn't really say so. Christmas is for children, that's what she said. Johnny's old enough to deal with all that fuss and nonsense. I want to tell Mr. Franklin that.
Oh, you don't live with your folks, huh, Johnny?
No, sir. He died about 8 months ago.
Oh, I see.
Christmas was all right when I was with them. Of course, I was a lot younger then.
Oh, yes.
It just beats me the way folks take Christmas so serious.
Well, I don't know.
Is it getting presents made any difference? As if I really cared about that knife.
Well, is that what you wanted, a pocket knife?
I don't want a knife. I don't want anything. I just wish there wasn't any Christmas, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess you aren't the first person to feel that way. It seems to me I remember reading a story once about a fellow felt the same way about Christmas you do. Just didn't have any use for it.
What happened to you?
Well, I doubt if I can call it to mind after all this time, but as I recollect, now mind you, this may not be word for word, but as I recollect, the man that it was about, the one that hated Christmas, that is, well, he was a real skinflint, he was. He just as stingy as they come. His name was, let me see, is Eben, something like that.
Eben?
Eben, yeah, I'm pretty sure that was it. Well, being so tight-fisted, this fellow Eben, he got to be the richest man in the whole territory.
You own a ranch?
Oh, sure. Had four of them. Four ranches and store buildings and farms and maybe a bank or two.
He was rich. I bet he had a mighty fine ranch house.
No, he didn't have a ranch house. Eben wasn't the sort to spend money on a ranch house unless there was profit in it. See, he just lived alone in town, had himself a steady room at the hotel. Well, anyway, one night while Eben was sitting in his room having supper, Christmas Eve it was, well, on this particular Christmas Eve, his only kin, a nephew, lived in the same town. He stopped by the hotel.
To wish you a Merry Christmas, Uncle, and invite you to our place for dinner tomorrow.
Christmas, fiddlesticks, powder out. I suppose you'd be closing up your livery stable for the occasion.
Why, sure, Uncle Eb.
And just how are the horses know it's Christmas? Answer me that.
Well, if they don't know it, we will. Can I tell Sally to expect you at 3?
You can expect me all you like, but I ain't coming. Not at 3 or any other time. Oh, if you're making so much money, you can afford to be giving parties. Maybe I ought to think about raising the rents on the livery stable.
Well, now,
I'll go on and get out of here before I lose my temper. All this nonsense about Christmas. Fiddlesticks. Hold
on. Well, after that, Johnny, the nephew didn't stick around there. He got out of Evan's hotel room at a regular gallop. It wasn't very long before Evan had another visitor. He's a young fella, tall, lanky, not very good at speaking. He just plain ordinary cowpoke. He was the foreman of the S&M ranch.
Oh, well, it took you long enough to get here. Where have you been? Selling off some of my herd without telling me about it?
No, sir. That day you rode by, I was out in the range hunting strays.
And a good thing I decided to check up on you, too. What's that cabin doing over by Holly Creek? And who are those people staying there?
They're my family. I built the shack for them myself.
I'm not going to have a bunch of nesters in my property. Tear it down.
Well, one of my boys has been sick. I can't afford
that
to rent it.
That's my concern. It's up to you to keep your family and what you earn. So see that you get rid of that shack tomorrow.
But tomorrow's Christmas.
Oh, well. Then you'll have plenty of free time to tear it down. I'll be out the day after to make sure you've done it. Good night.
Well, wasn't much use in arguing. Quorum knew that. So he put on his hat and shoveled out. Now, Evan was alone again. At least he thought he was alone. The clock on the mantel started striking 8, and that's when it was time for him to turn in. So he put on his flannel nightshirt and reached for the kerosene lamp to set it on the stool beside the bed, and right about then, the strangest thing happened.
What in tarnation?
Johnny, old Evan saw a man's face looking right at him from inside that lamp. Eyes and hair and nose and mouth, whiskers, all just as plain as day.
Jake!
It was old Jake, Evan's partner. There wasn't any mistake about it at all. It was Jake right to a T. Well, Evan sure didn't like the idea of having Jake right in the same room with him. You see, Jake had been dead for over 7 years. Not that Evan really believed in ghosts or haunts or anything like that. He told himself he'd just imagine all this.
I got to get a hold of myself.
He put out his hand to turn down the wick, but all of a sudden his fingers started trembling. There was Jake again, across the room this time, standing right by the bureau.
No!
And when the lamp slipped out of Evan's hand, the room didn't get dark at all. Jake seemed to be surrounded by a splotch of bright yellow light, and he was wearing the same boots and breeches and leather jacket that he'd had on 7 years ago, the day he died. But as Jake came closer, Evan could see that he was wearing something else. A small leather saddle strapped across his back. And hanging down from it were 2 saddlebags stuffed so full of gold nuggets and mortgage papers and land grants that Jake could hardly drag them across the floor.
You recognize me, Evan?
Sure, Jake. Why, sure, I'd never forget you, but... Well, what are you doing here? And why are you wearing that gizzard?
Always thinking about land and money. Always scheming and conniving. That's why I wear it. And that's why I've come to warn you, Evan. The saddle you're fixing up for yourself is even heavier than mine.
But I don't know what you mean, Jake. I ain't done no wrong. I ain't never done folks no wrong.
Have you ever done them any good? Any good at all?
Oh, why, sure. I've worked hard. I've saved my money. I ain't been a burden on anybody. Well, you should see our ranches, Jake. Over the way I've built them up.
I have seen them many times. And I've seen a lot more than that, too. That's my punishment. To spend eternity traveling around. Seeing mankind with its trials and tribulations, with its joys and hopes.
Is that so terrible?
Oh, Evan. To watch them and not be able to help them. You'll find out how terrible it is. You'll find out.
Well, there must be some way of avoiding this. You always were my friend. Hey, Jake, tell me what to do.
Evan, you've got to find out for yourself.
But how?
Tonight, at 1 o'clock, you'll be haunted by a ghost.
Another ghost?
Pay him heed, Evan. Pay him some heed.
Wait, Jake.
Don't leave me without it, Jake.
The yellow light sort of faded away and the ghost was gone. It was just like he hadn't even been there. And then something caught the corner of Evan's eye. A little glimmer on the floor. And he bent over to pick it up.
Easy. Easy. A gold nugget. Now where am I to...
And then he remembered. Those saddlebags of Jake's, they'd been filled clear to the brim with gold nuggets.
We're interrupting our story for only a moment, and only to tell you, our unseen audience, that you have helped more than you may realize to make this a very Merry Christmas for all of us on this program. Your being with us each week, your many kind letters, have told us that all the work that goes into bringing you the six-shooter has not been in vain, and we're grateful. So friends, from all of us, Jimmy Stewart and the cast, our writer, our director, engineers, and sound technicians, our best wishes for a happy holiday season. Oh yes, and before I forget it, beginning December 31st, the six-shooter will be on the air on Thursdays instead of Sundays. That's beginning Thursday the 31st. The time of broadcast will be listed in your local newspaper. Thank you. Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Gee, it was a gold nugget. Then Jake's ghost really had them around, mister?
Yeah, there just wasn't any doubt about it, Johnny.
Well, what happened then? Did the other spook turn up? The one Jake said was coming to see Evan?
Oh, sure, Johnny, sure, yeah. He was right on time, too. Evan was lying in bed, wide awake, of course. He hadn't been able to do much sleep, and he's too scared, you know. It was kind of peculiar. Evan was half scared the ghost would come and half scared he wouldn't, you see. But before the sound of the clock had died away, there he was. He's sitting in Evan's rocking chair like he'd been there all night long. And this ghost was a young fella, maybe 18, 19, all beaded up the way young bucks like to dress, you know, fancy chaps and checkered shirt and a red bandana tied around his neck.
Howdy, Evan.
Reckon
you've been expecting me.
Here you are. I guess so.
You ready to take a little trip?
Where to?
Back. Way back through the years.
Oh, but how can I go with you?
It's real easy. You see, I'm the ghost of Christmas past. Your past, Evan. Let's shove on.
Well, the next thing Evan knew, he and that ghost were standing out on a snow-covered prairie. There was a circle of covered wagons in front of them, and the people from the wagons were gathered together and listening to a tall,
cheer
white,
up,
bearded man.
Behold, I bring you good
he was reading the Bible.
Great joy, which will be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And there shall be a sign unto
and
you. You shall find a baby.
The ghost turned and pointed to a boy sitting away from the others on the tailboard of one of the wagons. Small boy, about 10 years old. With hollow cheeks and his eyes all red from crying.
Oh no.
It was Evan himself. On a Christmas day, a long, long time ago. Not a very happy Christmas either. It was only a week since the oxen had stampeded and his ma had been killed when she fell from the wagon. His pa had died with an Apache arrow in his chest.
No, I don't want to look at him anymore, can't you? Show me another Christmas.
Well, it was no sooner said than done. Now Evan and the ghost were in a bunkhouse. And Evan saw himself again. Oh, he's 10 years older than the boy on the prairie, but he was lying on a blanket staring up at the ceiling. And then his pal, Jay, came running in, all out of breath.
Come on, Ed. Get a clean shirt on. We got us an invite to a party.
Huh?
Yeah, the boss is throwing a big shindig. He says he'll fire us if we don't show up.
Evan couldn't help remembering that party. All the roast beef and the baked ham and square dancing and the pretty girls in their calico. He couldn't help saying out loud to the ghost.
Oh, dear. I wish I'd
What was that, Evan?
Nothing, Mr. Spirit. Nothing. I was just remembering how I treated my foreman today. That's all.
After that, the ghost took Evan to three or four more of his old Christmases. And none of them were very happy. Especially that Christmas when the young schoolmarm, sitting on the horsehair sofa, had unwrapped the tiny box Evan gave her and then handed it back to him.
It's a lovely ring, Evan. But I can't wear it.
Well, you're not courting somebody else.
No, Evan. But you are. You're courting something else.
Bill.
Land and money, cattle, profits. They mean more to you than I ever would. I'm sorry.
Mr. Ghost, no more of the past. Please, I've seen enough. A man wants to forget.
Sure, Evan. Whatever you say.
And before Evan could blink his eyes, he was right back in the hotel room. But once he got there, he blinked real hard because all of a sudden the ghost was becoming a different person. He was getting fatter and his stomach popped out 2 or 3 inches and a few wrinkles creased his cheeks. And finally his shorts turned into a shiny blue serge suit with a heavy gold chain dangling across the vest.
Hey, well, what's happened to you? Why are you so different now?
You seem to be getting tired of the past, so I thought we might take a gander at the present, if you've got no objections.
Well, the hotel room just melted away, and Evan was looking at that cabin his foreman had built on Holly Creek. Well, that cabin sure was crowded. Oh, there must have been 5 or 6 children, all helping their mother get the Christmas dinner, all laughing and talking, busy as summer cold. But when their father came in, he had a long face and a tired mouth, and his wife looked up and wanted to know what was troubling him.
Oh, I was just thinking about old Evan.
It's not a very pleasant thought for Christmas, Bob. By the way, what did he want with you yesterday? Was it about this cabin?
Hmm? Oh, no, of course not. Well, let's get on with dinner. Sit down, everybody. Now, where's my gym, huh? Well, I guess we're just going to have to eat.
And Bob looked all around the room. He was pretending he didn't see the little fellow in the corner. The boy with an iron brace on his leg and a wooden crutch propped up against the wall. The little Tammy wasn't going to be ignored.
Here I am.
Well, Bob picked him up and carried him over to the table.
God bless this food, this house, and us and our friends. Even old Evan. Amen.
The family found that part about Evan a little hard to swallow, but they finally managed, and Tim was the last one to chime in.
God bless us, everyone.
Evan didn't want to watch what was going on in that cabin any longer, but the next place the ghost showed him wasn't much easier on him. There was a big party going on at his nephew's house back in the livery stable. And one of the ladies was blindfolded, you see, and she was trying to pin the tail onto a donkey. But there was something peculiar about this donkey, about the way it was drawn. It looked more like a person than an animal. Well, Evan recognized who it was supposed to be right off.
You see, folks, I invited Uncle Evan to be with us, but he turned me down flat. So I figured we'd have him here in spirit, if not in the flesh.
Right back in the hotel room again. That's where Evan found himself.
Spirit, you showed me the past and the present. What's left to see?
The future, Evan. The future.
And that's how Evan came to see a Christmas of the future. A cold, brittle Christmas. And the two men standing on a street corner and the coat collars turned up so to keep out the snow.
Oh, he's dead all right. Dead as a doornail. Sure is a Christmas present I never expected. At least whoever handled his property won't be as hard to deal with as he was. Wonder if they'll bother giving him a funeral.
And in a frame house over in the side street near the edge of town, a woman was speaking to her husband.
Sonny, believe he's been dead for years. I haven't even thought of him since I don't know when. Richard, no. Well, once I was real fond of him. Bonnie, isn't he?
Ghost! Who are they talking about? Those men on the street. That woman I used to know. Who is it that's dead? Tell me.
And the ghost slowly turned and stretched out a long, thin, bony finger. And there, right at the end of that finger, was a tombstone, all covered with weeds. Eben could barely make out the name that was carved on it.
Ebenezer Scrooge.
No. What's this? Where am I?
You know what? He was right in his own bed, in his own nightshirt, and the sun was streaming through the frosted windows. But Evan didn't stay there very long, not for very long. He got into his boots and trousers as fast as he could, and he dashed down the stairs, out into the street. Well, you see, the stairs being closed gave Evan quite a problem. Well, he just have to make Fuzzy Wagner open the butcher shop up, that's all. Of course, Fuzzy didn't have much choice, seeing as how the shop was located in one of Evan's buildings. And when Evan told him what he wanted, a turkey and a ham, well...
No. I've got to make it two hams and send them out to the cabin on the S&M Ranch. And they're not to know that I ordered them. You understand, Fuzzy? Here's the money and a little extra for your trouble.
Well, before Fuzzy could get his jaw shut up again, Evan was on his way. He headed right straight out to his nephew's house. And Evan was the life of the party, too. Well, the way he carried on, he'd laughing and making jokes and telling stories on himself, and he insisted that they use that donkey to put his face on when they played games, you know.
Yes, because that's what I've been all these years. A real, four-footed, long-eared donkey.
And the next morning, though, that's what Evan enjoyed the most. He was up bright and early and hitched the team to the buckboard and drove out to the S&M, hurrying the horses all the way.
Come on, Bess! Come on, Martha! It's up a little lively.
If he could just get out there before his foreman started tearing down that cabin.
Whoa, Martha! Whoa! Well, Robert?
Yes, sir?
I see you ain't carried out my orders.
Well, it was Christmas. I just couldn't tell him. I'll do it today.
Oh! This is the last straw. I'm not putting up with your shenanigans any longer, young fella.
But please,
that cabin's coming down and no buts about it. And then you're building a new ranch house in this place. Big enough for you and your whole family.
What?
Oh, yes. I'm also doubling your wages as of last week. Merry Christmas, Bob. Even if I am a day late. No, not a day. More like half a lifetime. But Merry Christmas anyway. And as your son says, God bless us, everyone.
Well, that's the way things worked out, Johnny, more or less.
That's a fine story, Mr. Really fine. I reckon I know why you told it to me.
How's that?
Says I understand about Christmas and how important it is to do for other people instead of just thinking about yourself.
Well, no. I didn't have that in mind especially. This story just happened to come into my head, that's all.
Maybe if I ask you Aunt Mary something, a present maybe. Oh, shucks, what could I give? I don't have no money.
Well, of course, there are lots of things don't cost a penny, not a single red cent, you know.
Hmm?
Well, now, you... Let's see. Take that little spruce over there. I'd be real easy to cut that down. With a little fixing, maybe a few doodads from around the house. I'll bet you can make a Jim Dandy Christmas tree over there.
I suppose so.
Looks good,
the tree without something to put under it.
Oh, yes, I see what you mean. Johnny... you don't happen to know Jim Bender, do you? In Thompson's Corner and his three daughters?
He's only got two, Mr. Sarah and him.
Oh, that's all. That's all. I was spending Christmas with them. It looks like I'm carrying an extra present. It's a real pretty little red bonnet with feathers on it.
I
couldn't take it, mister.
Oh, no, no. I wasn't thinking of giving it to you, Johnny. But I was sort of hoping that you'd show me the trail from here on in. Of course, it would mean you're turning around going back home, but if I was to cause you changing your plans, I'd feel obligated to pay you back some way, you know.
Well,
it would be only fair. Trouble is, I haven't got much money, so if you wouldn't mind accepting the bonnet instead, you'd be doing me a favor, Johnny. Well, there is a resemblance, I have to admit that.
Fair incarnation of you, Ben, John Carville. I've been looking high and low for you since dawn.
Well, I just went for a little ride, Aunt May, to get us a Christmas tree, see?
Christmas tree? Fiddlesticks.
This gentleman won't let me cut it down. I was taking it inside. Be right back, mister.
If we had any use for a Christmas tree. I suppose he's figuring there'll be a whole lot of presents under it.
No, I don't think so. But, just between you and me, I got a hunch there'll be at least one person waiting for somebody.
What are you talking about?
No, it wouldn't be fair for me to speak out before Christmas, you know that.
You don't mean he's got something for me?
No, you mustn't get too curious so early.
But I thought he didn't like me. I thought he just hated having to live here with an old maid. I guess I just don't know nothing about kids. Nothing at all. I don't deserve to get...
Well, I'd better get moving along. Say goodbye to Johnny for me, will you? And, I wonder if you'd give this to him.
Hmm?
Yeah, tell him the little blade on it's kind of dull, but...
A pocket knife?
Yeah.
Now, how did you know?
Go on, man.
God bless you, mister. And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Beginning December 31st, The Six Shooter will be on Thursdays instead of Sundays. We hope you'll join us in our new time. The Six Shooter is an NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. The transcribed story was written by Frank Burt in collaboration with Charles Dickens. Mr. Stewart may soon be seen in the Universal International picture The Glenn Miller Story. Howard McNear played Scrooge, and special music was by Basil Adlam. The entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. And now, until Thursday the 31st, this is Hal Gibney speaking. Merry Christmas. Hear Rex Harrison and Anna Lee in the NBC Star Playhouse on the NBC Radio Network.
Next, on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Noon Book Hour, followed by the Coronavirus Update at 1.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 55 and clear. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the low 30s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 50s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the upper 30s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 12 noon.
It's time for the Noon Book Hour. Readings of books from all genres, handpicked by staff at the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello again. This is Rosemary Scalessa for the Georgia Radio Reading Service, continuing with the book, The Puppy That Came for Christmas, by Megan Ricks. This is the fourth reading from this book, which was published by Penguin Press in the year 2011. Last time, it was a very difficult day when it was time to return Emma to the Helper Association so that she could be given to a disabled person. We now continue from where we left off. "I'd better go," I said, when I unloaded all of Emma's toys. "I bet head office has never met a dog who has this many toys before," Jamie said. I stroked Emma. "She'll be okay, won't she?" "Yes, you know she will. And we'll get reports on how she's getting on every now and again. We'll keep you in touch with her." I hesitated, unwilling to say anything or move a muscle. "It's okay," Jamie said. "Look, it's best if you go quickly. It's easier for you and her. I'll give you a call as soon as I have your new puppy." I nodded and then turned away and walked to the car, conscious of every step I was taking away from her. Knowing that Emma was watching me all the way, I watched her watching me in the rearview mirror as I started the engine. I couldn't hear what